Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Real Sports Talk Radio, courtesy of BackSportsPage.com, broadcasting live exclusively on Blog Talk Radio.
Well, someday we're going to get this fixed, and we're going to get a good laugh out of it. Welcome.
Well, we cut it off at the right time. We cut it off at the right time. Yeah, I mean, we can be from Back Sports Page, blah, 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 blah. I mean, we got that down, so we're good to go.
Yeah.
And
all you political
aficionados that are taking an hour off from the presidential election, and for those that hopefully are getting their power back, welcome back to the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show. My co-host is a little bit more involved in the politics of today, and I'm sure he'll go into that in a little bit, rather than myself. But more importantly, honestly, welcome back to those that have lost power and lost, unfortunately, a whole lot more from Hurricane Sandy or Tropical Storm Sandy or whatever you want to call it. And get ready for a nor'easter tomorrow in the Northeast.
Yeah, it should be fantastic. No one wants to hear my political views. I'm pretty blatant with them, and this is not the time or the place. You know, just like 4 years ago, I would write on Facebook all the time. This year, nothing. You know what? People know me, know what I think. This isn't the place. This is the place to discuss football. And I'd like to congratulate, actually, my compadre in crime, and Julie Rutterman, for working all weekend on some Hurricane Sandy relief. I wish I could have been there. Unfortunately, I am, as I seem to always be, I'm in study mode. But I think you guys did a good thing, and you should be proud of what you did, especially Jules. Not that you're listening, but we're proud of you, honey.
Absolutely.
So,
and you stole my 5 minutes of thunder right there. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in the last 5 minutes as to what some of the people out in Wayne and in New York and all over the country have spent their time doing in the last 48 to 72 hours. It's kind of been interesting. And I would also like to extend my mea culpa to my co-host, who I said last week that Kevin Durant did not sign a 5-year deal. He did. He signed a 4-year extension, which made it a 5-year deal based on last year's salary. You are allowed to have two 5-year contracts, as I later found out, not one, which you did specify last week, and I did correct you. So, mea culpa to you.
Thank you. I get one of those about every quarter. Actually, I didn't even realize that, but I appreciate it. So I think this is going to be a pretty big football day. Baseball is now done. The big awards haven't come out yet. The NBA, you know, do you really want to talk about the Lakers being 1-3 or 0-3? You know, this is what happens when you run a Princeton offense with the best point guard of your generation because it becomes a pretty much non-entity. If anyone wants to call in, 760-283-0846.
Before we go to football, and I don't want to talk about the Lakers, but I do want to talk about the 3-0 New York Knicks very quickly, because Carmelo Anthony, we said this during the NBA preview, is playing the best basketball of his life right now. I mean, granted, he's playing at the 4 spot, and the smaller New York Knicks are playing awfully well. I mean, they're 3-0. They're incorporating their big men. Rasheed Wallace is back in the game. Tyson Chandler is playing excellent D. And more importantly, Ray Felton, who we both thought was a good acquisition, especially in lieu of Jeremy Lin, has certainly picked up the pace. Now, I do understand that this is 3 games in, small sample size, as we always like to talk about it on the show. And the most important thing for the Knicks will be the last 40 games, and whether they're older players, Jason Kidd, Marcus Camby, Rasheed Wallace, at all, can merge and stay in the shape that they are. But you have to be a little impressed by them, don't you?
Uh, haven't paid one iota of attention. There's only one basketball game that matters to me right now, and that'll be Friday night, where we have University of Maryland versus the defending champion versus Kentucky Wildcats. I am not. I cannot concern myself a week into the NBA season. I'm just not there.
Okay.
To be honest,
I can understand that.
Obviously, a good start. And as you said, the question is, can you know the 53-year-old guys, Jason Kidd, Kurt Thomas, Rasheed, Marcus Camby, you know, they're playing now that slowdown ISO game, and we'll see. You know, it's good because it fits Carmelo Anthony, number one. Number two, it does allow you know, these players who are just older. It's a better fit for them. Now, you know, more and we had discussed while neither of us had them particularly high in our divisional picks. We did both think the team was built more for a playoff style if they can stay healthy and they can if they don't show their age. And obviously, so far they haven't. It's just a little bit, you know, it's just not. By the end of November, I think I'll be more into basketball mode. I'm just to be honest, and I apologize to the people who are listening. I'm just not there yet. You know, I watched. I'm more interested kind of in the combustion that's going out in LA than I am in New York. And I just think it's more interesting. And of course, you know, the James Harden trying to prove me wrong that he's a max player down in Houston. But everything else is kind of, I don't want to say come see, come saw. It's just there are other things to discuss, I guess. And
okay. The
first week of the NBA season is just not that exciting. Maybe because also of everything that's happened in New York over the last week, maybe because it's Election Day. There are just more, not that football is more pressing than basketball per se, but you know, the Knicks are off to a great start to where they are 5, 10, 15 games into the season. And as you said, the sample size gets bigger, you go forward from there.
Okay, and speaking of which, I did forget to announce that next week will be our college basketball preview. Speaking of college basketball, kicking off on this week, I believe the kickoff is Thursday. The Syracuse game, Syracuse versus San Diego State, is being moved it's kicking off on Friday. So it's being moved from Friday to Sunday because of bad weather on the USS Midway, which is out in San Diego. So that's being changed. And one last iota of basketball information. We always hype up our own schools, Maryland for my co-host and Syracuse for myself. You know what? Syracuse landed another top 20 recruit for 2014. Again, no idea on how Jim Boeheim does it, but he just keeps rolling on with the recruits. Now, a championship would be nice, but it's nice to have quality players coming up to the dome. So,
agreed.
But we'll talk about that a little bit more next week on our college basketball break.
Agreed. But before that, what exactly constitutes bad weather in San Diego? Is 57 degrees?
No, they're talking about, remember, the game is being played on the flight deck of a retired aircraft carrier. So they actually are calling for 75% chance of showers and gusty winds for the city between the hours of 4 p.m. on Friday and 5 a.m. on Saturday. So, you know what, you and I could play ball on the on the blacktop and take it inside to a gym every once in a while if it rains. Or even play through it, but I guarantee you, if you're playing on the top of an aircraft carrier, you probably don't want to be playing in rain or gusty winds. That ball may wind up in the ocean.
Well, considering Scoop Jardine isn't shooting for you guys anymore, there's a good chance that you guys will be a little bit more on target.
There you go.
I think that was pretty good, actually. All right, we're at the halfway point of the NFL season. We're kind of near the end of college football. Where do you want to start?
Well, I think we should start with the game of, well, as our esteemed friend Nabate Isles would say, or so he said last year, the game of the decade. No, that was last year. I'm sorry. Well, we had it again, Alabama and LSU.
And once again, it was the third most interesting game going on at that point, although it was much more interesting than last year's. Alabama, for the first time in really 2 years, was outplayed in a game. LSU took the lead late. Aidan McCarron, who had not completed a single pass, I think he completed one pass in the second half, led Alabama on a last-minute, last 2 or 3 minute drive to a 20-yard screen pass for a touchdown to lead them to a come-from-behind 21-17 victory. And the road is clear. I mean, Alabama, there's only two teams I could see threatening Alabama, and none of them are in the SEC. An impressive win? Yeah, I guess that's the right word to say. Anytime you go to LSU and go to Death Valley at night, you win. It's impressive. Are they unbeatable? No. Now, I know there are a couple people who listen who think I'm a true anti-Alabama, anti-SEC guy. They're very good. If they go undefeated, they go to the title game. I'm not really sure what else I need to say. I wouldn't put this as one of the great teams of all time, but they're a solid number one.
Could Alabama beat the Cleveland Browns right now?
Only if Trent Richardson – what team is Trent Richardson playing for?
No, the Alabama team this year, could they beat the Cleveland Browns this year?
No.
Okay. I mean, it's been dancing around throughout – I mean, it's been said by a couple of – I don't remember which coach said it. A college coach said – oh, Steve Spurrier said it – that Alabama could beat the Cleveland Browns.
Apparently, Steve Spurrier also said today that anyone over 21 on the team could vote. But you kind of have to take what Steve Spurrier said, that he would allow them to vote. I think you kind of have to take whatever Steve Spurrier says and kind of just shrug your shoulders and go forward. The most enjoyable game of the night by far was watching Oregon-USC. Alabama couldn't beat an NFL team in Norcott, Oregon, but Oregon may be the fastest team in professional sports. Getting over 700 yards.
You just said professional sports.
Yes.
So they are faster than any professional team.
They are the fastest team I think I've ever seen on offense. These guys, this Kenjani Barber, Thomas, Barber ran for 321 yards and 5 touchdowns. They won 62-51, accumulating over 700 yards of offense. They averaged more than 10 yards a play, which was pretty incredible. An extraordinarily fun game to watch. USC had cut the lead, I believe, to 3 at something like 44-41. And Oregon, I think, scored 5 touchdowns in 5 plays or less. I am fascinated to see what an Alabama-Oregon game will look like. I'm not 100% sure we're going to get there. I do think they'll both go undefeated, but I think Kansas State will play a part in this. And we'll talk about that in a little while. But they are extraordinarily fast. And who are your championship teams? Did you have USC, Virginia Tech, or is that Mike's
up? I had USC, Virginia Tech.
You're more than done. I believe Mike was Oklahoma LSU, although I'm not 100% sure. And he's got 4 losses. I had Oregon, Wisconsin. I have 4 losses all with Wisconsin. It tell you something. It's funny. I was talking with one of my writers who's a pro football writer. He doesn't want to write. He thinks college football has been much more entertaining this year. I think college football is much more entertaining every year. I think it's a more fun sport to watch. The quality may not be as good, but I think it's an incredibly enjoyable game. We get teams that come from nowhere, a Notre Dame this year, who will get to that game. And I'm never a big Notre Dame person, and I've given them a lot of credit this year. But, man, did they get some calls this week against Pittsburgh.
Well, hold on a sec. You made a claim that you think that college football is a better game. More enjoyable to watch. And I can see where your point is. I don't think there are more enjoyable games to follow if you're following them as a fan. Because much the same as I don't think college basketball is. Because once players aren't there for long enough to follow the team. I think once you get to know the good or great college basketball or college football players, they're gone.
Well,
so I think if you're following, if you're following the team because you went there, or you're following the if you're following Syracuse, for instance, for me, Maryland for you, because we're Syracuse fans, but we don't know every player on the team, and we're not following the team that way. We just follow them because of the name on the front of their jersey. That's one thing. But if you're following the team, as in you root for the individual players and you know them, they're only going to be there 2 or 3 years. So I think the following of the game is a little different than watching an individual game. I will give you the watching of the individual game, not the following of the team.
Well, I disagree to a point. I think part of that, your comment, and that kind of relates to that our football teams have never, we don't have great football traditions. You go to an Alabama or an LSU or University of Texas or something along those lines, I don't think it's presented that way. I think, I think the passion is more there. Maybe it's a little bit, I don't think, especially with the rise of fantasy football, passion for pro football isn't per se about your professional team in a lot of ways. A lot of ways it's kind of about, you root for your team, but you root for your fantasy team, and there's always conflict. In college, you don't have that. You have your utter passion for your team. So I disagree. I mean, yeah, I don't know the six-string quarterback on Maryland, but I actually happen to because, they're playing their six-string quarterback. But, yes, I understand it for passion for the entity as opposed to the individual. But no, I don't think that takes away from it.
Okay.
So Alabama comes from behind, Oregon cruises, Kansas State has probably the toughest game of Washington, the toughest game. Kansas State goes to Oklahoma State, loses their Heisman leading quarterback Colin Klein, who is for intents and purposes Tim Tebow, except he plays in Manhattan, Kansas instead of Tallahassee, Florida. And they cruise to another 17-point win, 20-point win. And this team, debatably the Big 12 is debatably the best conference in football this year. I thought it was the best conference last year. You can argue the SEC. It's between those two every year. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens if Kansas State can run the table. Because they don't have the glam of an Oregon. They don't have the obsession of an Alabama. They don't have the prestige of a Notre Dame. I wonder if now the odds are still that one of these four teams at least will lose somewhere. And Kansas State goes to TCU this week. And if Colin Klein, who got hurt in the third quarter, is unable to play, that's a pretty tough run. But everyone's going to be a favorite going forward. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. It's going to be interesting if Klein doesn't come back, how this affects the Heisman race, because I think he was the favorite. And it's my feelings on Bill Snyder. I think he's the best coach in the country. It's an interesting year. There are six undefeated still. We'll get to Notre Dame in a minute. But, what's your thought? If you have these top three teams where you have the team that probably beat the best schedule in Kansas State, potentially. Oregon had the weakest schedule. Alabama, they're all somewhere in between. Oregon, I think, had the weakest out-of-conference schedule. I'm sorry.
Well, this is always going to be the crux until we have the playoff, which President Obama took credit for last night on Monday Night Football, which was an interesting interview by Chris Berman to begin with. The same, and as equal time permits for us being in the media, we must say what Mitt Romney said last night, which he took credit to the New England Patriots dynasty. Both ludicrous assertions, but whatever. Moving on. Until we get a playoff, this is what's going to happen. Who's going to be the better undefeated? How do you rank the couple of them? I would point you to Sports Illustrated's profile on Bill Snyder and the which was in last week's issue. It was an excellent read. It reinforces what Seth was saying as far as him being probably the best coach in America. He gets the most out of his talent, if nothing else. He may not be the best coach, but he certainly gets the most out of his talent. They are an interesting mix. Do I think they run the table? Well, you just gave the one game which may prohibit that, and that's going to TCU. I mean, Guy Patterson, the coach at TCU, always seems to put up a good fight. He hasn't run the table, but he's gotten mighty close a couple of times. This is the game, and they may be losing their quarterback. Well, this can settle everything 1-2-3, wouldn't it, if they lost this week against TCU?
Yeah, and props to TCU. In one of the more fun games of the week last weekend, they came from behind to beat one smitty, now really depressing West Virginia, scoring on a 94-yard touchdown pass with a minute to go to put the game into overtime, and then in the first overtime, doing a two-point conversion to win the game. Gary Patterson is and has been one of the best coaches in America for a long time. He will have his choice of jobs if he ever wants to leave. He just doesn't really seem to want to go anywhere. The other team we need to talk about is Notre Dame. And Notre Dame is fourth in the poll, undefeated, barely beating Pittsburgh in double overtime.
Wait. And most importantly, has now gained the respect of Seth Kamens.
Well, they kind of lost it this week. They gained it after going to Oklahoma and beating a solid Oklahoma Sooners team convincingly. And this was a bit of a trap game for them. Pittsburgh has had some good wins over Virginia Tech and a horrendous loss to Youngstown State. They're 4-4 under their new coach, Paul Christie. But the issue I had was Pittsburgh was dominating the game at 20-6 in the fourth. And on a 4th-and-4 call, a bad, bad, bad pass interference call. Gave them a first down, and then they would score on the next play. It would go to overtime, and apparently, and I just read this today, that Pittsburgh had a chance to kick a field goal and win it in the first or second overtime, I forget which. And they had two number 33s on the table, on the field. And the ref didn't catch it. So they had two people with the same uniform number. And the Pittsburgh kicker, who had made three field goals already in the game, most likely on the second kick would have made it. That being said, you know, they survive, they go forward, and they have Boston College this week, Wake Forest next week, and they have a potentially uninspired USC team at USC on their last game of the season. And the real interesting thought is if Oregon loses to either Oregon State or to UCLA potentially in a Pac-10 title game, at Kansas State and Notre Dame, it's going to be tight. I think Kansas State's a better team. I think they played a better schedule just because they play in a very good conference. But you know, people want to see Alabama Notre Dame. You know, that's retro 1979, 1973, 74. There's title games, and people want to see Notre Dame doing well. And Brian Kelly has done that. And whether they go 12-0 or 11-1 or 10-2, this is a great year for Notre Dame football. And there's nothing left to be said. You know, some of the teams they've beaten haven't turned out to be the caliber you thought. The Big Ten is horrendous, to say the least. But you beat who's in front of you. And they have beaten, with the exception of Pittsburgh and Stanford a little bit, they've beaten every team, I don't say convincingly, but relatively so. A couple other, I guess, things that we should touch on in regards to college football. Boise State loses, so they're out of the BCS bid. Thought process, I guess. Anyway, they lost, I believe, to Louisiana Tech or Louisiana, one of the, I forget which school. There's only one school left that's in the top BCS top 25, which is Louisiana Tech. And the way they make the BCS is that they're in the top 16, and one of the Big Six conference teams, champions, does not have a rating in the top six. And right now, it's looking whoever wins the Big Ten is going to be nowhere near top 16 in the BCS ranking. So
well,
you may have a
Louisville. Neither will the Big East, right? I mean,
no. Right now you have Louisville at number 9.
Oh yeah.
Who's undefeated? And I would be
which is incredibly scary after they beat Temple this past weekend. But remember, Syracuse has to play them, so there's always that chance.
Yeah, plus...
I am laughing. Anyway, go on.
And I think I will be actually at Louisville's last game of the season at a potential 10-1 Rutgers team. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But it has been a fun year, as always, in college football. A little bit of a controversy in regards to Heisman. Now, if Colin Klein is out for a couple of games and he loses his you know, the kind of his momentum. Are we looking at a defensive player for Heisman? Are we looking at a Monte Tau from Notre Dame, a Kevin Minter from LSU? It's been a fun year in college football. It hasn't been a great year in college. There hasn't been great individual talents per se, more than any other year, I guess. It's much tighter. There's no, you know, first we had Matt Barkley, then we had Geno Smith, now we're on Colin Klein. You know, maybe it'll be the Barber from Oregon. Maybe it'll be Monte Tau from Notre Dame. We'll see what happens.
Seth, is this the year that somebody comes out of the blue, such as somebody from Notre Dame or somebody from Louisville, that throws up a great November and takes home the award? I mean, there's not been a start-to-finish winner like there's been in the past. So who are the dark horses? I mean, could somebody come up and, I mean, you're our college football expert, especially amongst the two of us.
Well, Kenjani Barber from Oregon has kind of come out of nowhere. He's averaging about 7 yards a run. He has 1,300 yards. The only reason he doesn't have that many carries is because they've been up 40 in every game going into the second half, so they're not using him very much. Potentially, the receiver from USC, Marquise Lee, who caught 350 yards against Arizona a couple of weeks ago. It's kind of hard to see, first of all, anyone from USC in this disappointing season let alone going to New York, let alone winning. You know, you want to talk, it's kind of hard in November for someone to come out of nowhere. The one name that may come to mind, and you just mentioned the team, potentially is Teddy Bridgewater, the quarterback from Louisville. But again, I think it would be very, very difficult to see a Louisville player win a Heisman. You know, people are talking about Adrian McCarron. Adrian McCarron is a nice quarterback. Adrian McCarron is not a Heisman winner. He's just not. He's a good quarterback. He's a very good quarterback. But
is there a defensive player that could come out this year? I mean, there are very few years where you look at the Heisman Trophy race and you go, you know what, it could be anybody. I mean, the last time I recall this, there haven't been all that many where you say, okay, you know what, it could be up for anybody. I mean, Clowney from South Carolina, I watched the South Carolina game on Saturday. That man's incredible. I mean, absolutely a beast. Now, does he have the stats to back it up? I don't know. I mean, he looked like the most dominant, at least the most dominant defensive player in college on Saturday. He may be the most dominant player in college, the way that he plays. Now, granted, he's only a sophomore.
Yeah, I mean, he's already being predicted as the number one pick next year. If you're going to go defense, you're going to go Monte Tau, most likely the linebacker from Notre Dame. He's been, along with Kevin Minter from LSU, one of the two best linebackers in college football this year. He leads this team. He's got a great story. He's a Mormon from Hawaii who fell in love with the idea of playing in Notre Dame. His girlfriend and his mother died within 2 days of each other prior to one of the games earlier this year. He's the heart and soul of that team. I mean, that team offensively is relatively weak. They have a decent running game with Wood, but Everett Golson, you know, has potential, but he can't even keep, you know, Brian Kelly alternates him and Tommy Rees. Monte Tau, I'd be surprised if Monte Tau did not go to New York. I would be surprised also if he won. At the end of the day,
okay,
if you're going to win on the defensive side, you have to be unquestionably the best player in football. And the only guy, Charles Woodson.
There's only been one. That was Charles Woodson, who also played on the offensive side and had that one defining moment, which everybody recalls, which is the one-handed backwards deflection for a touchdown, for an interception. I mean, everybody recalls that moment. And he took it from Peyton Manning.
Right.
Who did not have a great year, a great collegiate year. I mean, Tennessee did a good job, but Notre Dame was in the top 10. He played fantastic. And the next closest was Hugh Greene in 1979 for Pittsburgh. So, I mean, they're few and far between. I understand. That's why I was saying, is this the year? Is there somebody that dominant on the defensive side of the ball that could take it? But you're telling me no. So on November 6th, right now, if you have to put the Heisman race, if you have to put odds on the Heisman race, where are you going with this?
Right now, well, I think it's actually Woodson's biggest moment, which is kick return against against Ohio State for a touchdown and did the Heisman in the end zone. If I'm going, I'm saying Colin Klein, quarterback from Kansas State, 1, Monte Cal, linebacker from Notre Dame, 2, and Kenjani Barber, running back from Oregon, number 3.
Okay. So moving on to where I am a little bit more inclined, which would be the National Football League. My Jets actually win this week by not playing, except Rex Ryan won the most overrated coach award today, so we won something.
Congratulations.
Thanks. So we got the two most overrated, my team has the two most overrated players in the NFL, in Tim Tebow and Mark Sanchez, and now we have the most overrated coach. Fantastic. That's what I want to see. So let's go, but on a more somber note, what happened to Eli? I mean, played against Pittsburgh Steelers. Steelers didn't play that great of a game. They lost Antonio Brown early in the game. Eli in the fourth quarter didn't have the magic this week.
Eli hasn't really had the magic this last month. Pittsburgh dominated this game. If it wasn't for a somewhat dubious pseudo-tuck rule touchdown, this game probably would have been over sooner. The Giants need – I don't know when their bye week is. I think it's in 2 weeks. Maybe it's next – I think
yes.
It's in 2 weeks. They need it. They haven't – What happens with the Giants, it seems to happen every season, is they start off strong and then they end up kind of in that November swoon. And then in December, they kind of get their mojo back. And luckily, that division has absolutely fallen apart. And with a 6-3 record, they have a 2.5 game lead. With Dallas losing to Atlanta, Philly getting beaten pretty convincingly by New Orleans, and Washington losing to 1-6 Carolina.
So what? Last night we saw pretty much what I would say is the end of the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, I know that a lot of people wrote off the Giants at just about this time last year when they were playing very poor football and they went on a huge run. But I don't see that out of the Eagles. In fact, the one thing I saw last night, which I don't think I have seen from an Eagles team ever, is such poor offensive line play. I mean, they got sacked 7 times by the league's worst defense. And Michael Vick, on every throw, was getting hammered. For all those that say Michael Vick should be benched, well, that's fine. But don't expect any better play from Nick Foles if that's the offensive line play that you're getting out of Philadelphia. I mean, they looked awful.
It seems like a team that is just tired and beaten up. And, you know, for as much hype as they've had in the last year and a half, you know, they're under 500 in the last 2 years. They, you know, I don't think benching Michael Vick is particularly the answer. And apparently Marcus Vick, put in for a trade request, and anyone who takes Marcus Vick seriously should have a, I have a bridge that used to be in Brooklyn and maybe I don't know where it would be anymore. The wind may have unfortunately blown it away. But to tell you, it's I was going somewhere with that joke. It just didn't really materialize.
No, and it was really poor. Okay, moving on.
Most people don't think I'm very funny anyway. So,
I mean, I did pick the Eagles to go to the Super Bowl. I mean, I'm the guy that picked them at 12-4. I'm looking at my predictions right now. I had them at 12-4 going to the Super Bowl. They remind me of the Steelers from 2 years ago, in which they're just getting really, really old. Now, the difference between the Steelers and the Eagles is that while they're getting old, they don't have Ben Roethlisberger, and B, when they focused on getting better in the offseason, the Steelers focused on the interior lines on both. They drafted Ziggy Hood to replace a Casey Hampton. They drafted a Mike Adams and a David DeCastro to replace the offensive lines with Willie Colon. The Eagles haven't done that. I mean, they tried, but Brendan Graham and Mike Patterson just haven't worked out on the defensive line, and Jason Peters and Demetrius Bell have both gotten hurt on the offensive line.
Yeah, it just seems like a team that's just kind of lost their way, for lack of a better term. They're, Michael Vick, you know, despite everything, is still 32, 33 years old. And, you know, he's always been an amazing athlete, but an athlete first and a quarterback second. And maybe that's taken a little bit of a toll. They've never used LeSean McCoy the way they should. That takes a toll. The receivers aren't big. They're not strong guys. You know, they're not big, strong, really receivers. They're a team that just may have peaked and just never really materialized. And, you know, speaking of teams that peaked and never materialized, is their opponent next week, the Dallas Cowboys, who are 3-6 and seemingly going nowhere.
Game one?
Yeah, pretty much. I would say the peak would be the guy who was sitting next to us who kept reminding us that they were warming up. I reminded them they hadn't won a playoff game in 19 since his son was born, but he was a little too intoxicated to really understand the magnitude of that conversation. They're 3-6. D'Amico Murray's still hurt. They lose games they should win. And Dez Bryant had one catch.
And missed curfew.
Did he miss curfew again?
No, he missed it on Saturday or Friday.
Yeah, but I think he was given an excuse to that.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this curfew saga is supposedly this is self-imposed. So who cares? I mean, I probably should be bringing this up, but the most interesting thing about the Cowboys that I've heard in the last week, besides the fact that Tony Romo couldn't throw the ball straight, especially last night, which was awful, not last night, Sunday night, which was awful, was the fact that Jerry Jones has stated that he will always be the GM of the Cowboys. Always. I don't remember the last owner that was also a GM. I'm going back in my mind and I'm thinking that...
Al Davis.
Okay, Al Davis, who also didn't win didn't win as much as he lost. Let's continue back. Connie Mack, 50 years, won, I think, 3 championships in the 30s. Ted Turner did it for a little bit. They didn't win. I don't know. I'm sensing a trend here that when you're the owner, as he said on the broadcast, would owner Jerry Jones fire GM Jerry Jones? And he said, yes.
Absolutely.
Well, Jerry, you have your answer. Get out of there. You're not going to win with the way that you are playing. You want superstars. You're kind of like the Eagles in the same way. You've lost your way. Time to start a new plan.
When did the Chicago Bears become 7-1?
When their defense decided to play amazing football. I mean, they are turnover savvy. Charles Tillman, as President Obama said last night, Charles Tillman may be the best defensive player in the NFL right now. He seems to force a fumble every single week for a touchdown. I mean, their defense scored, I think it's 2 touchdowns and blocked a punt for a touchdown this year, this week. And if you can score 3 touchdowns, what's that?
I was going to say, I think they have 8 touchdowns total so far this year.
Yeah, so if you can score a touchdown every single week on defense, you're going to win games. I mean, their defense is unbelievable this year, and they've done what the Eagles and the Cowboys have not. They supplemented their big stars with younger players on the interior line, and they are playing phenomenal. Now, if their offensive line can keep Jay Cutler standing upright, they'll win in the playoffs. If not, we'll see Jason Campbell, which if you're a Redskins fan, you know where that goes.
Yeah. The other thing I'm curious in regards to the Bears, I mean, this is pretty much our midseason review here on Seth and Sean. And if anyone wants to talk a little football, it's 0-8-7-6-0-2-8-3-0-8-4-6. They haven't beaten a team with a winning record. The only one they played is Green Bay, and Green Bay whooped them. So let's see what happens further down in their schedule. But, yeah, their whole NFC Central is just solid. Green Bay is playing better. Detroit is starting to come on a little bit. A good win. That's just a solid, easy win at Jacksonville. In Minnesota, I mean, their record is I don't think either of us gave them more than 4 or 5 wins, and they've already surpassed. They've already hit that level.
I had them at 2.
Oh, there you go. I think I had them at 4. So,
I mean, this week the Bears go up against the Texans, 7-1 versus 7-1, and that's in Soldier Field on Sunday night. So, if you want to test, that's what's going to happen this week. Then they play the 49ers, the Vikings, the Seahawks at home, and then they end the season with the Vikings, Packers, Cardinals, and Lions. So I'm saying they're probably winning 3 out of 4 there. They're already 7-1. That makes them 11-2. And if they split the 4 games between the Texans, 49ers, Vikings, and Seahawks, they're 13-3. I think I had them at 12-4, so I think I'm doing pretty well.
Well done.
Thank you. I'll pat myself on the back because I had the Eagles in the Super Bowl. I mean, until I can get past that, probably not going very far.
I kind of went the easy way out taking the Packers-Patriots. The NFC, let's see what else we got here. The NFC South has been dominated by Atlanta. New Orleans, is it too late for New Orleans to make a run at the playoffs?
Absolutely. 2-6. I mean, 2-6 means they pretty much have to win every single game. I'm sorry, they're 3-6.
They're 3-5.
So they have 3-5? No, they were. No, I think they didn't have a bye yet.
Okay, yeah, take your word for it.
We're going to look that up.
I'm looking it up right now. 3-6, they'd have to pretty much run the table.
Yeah. They
bye. They're 3-5.
They're 3-5. Okay, so basically they're 3-5. Right now, if we look at the NFC, I mean, let's take a look at where we are in the NFC because I think that will probably give us a better idea in the playoff picture where we're going. So the Falcons are in. I mean, right? I mean, the Falcons, Bears, 49ers, and Giants. Let's put all 4 of those guys in. So you got 2 wild card teams right now. You have the Packers at 6-3, the Seahawks and Vikings at 5-4. So the Packers are 6-3, they're in right now, and the Seahawks are 5-4. So the Saints, who are 3-5, if they ran the table and won the last 8 games, would be 11-5. So in order for that to happen, the Packers would have to go 11-5. They have to finish with 11, so they have to go 5-4. 5-4.
Oh.
No, 5-2. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, they'd have to go 5-2. 11-5. Yep. Do I think that the Saints can do it? No. I mean, the Saints' schedule is not the easiest in the world. They still have to play Atlanta again. They have to play the Giants. So, I mean, let's pick out 3 losses. So, they play this week, Atlanta goes to New Orleans. I don't know. That could be a win, maybe. Let's say Atlanta at New Orleans and San Francisco at New Orleans, one of those is a win, one of those is a loss. Okay? They face Oakland at Oakland, so that's a win. So that's 2-1. They go to Atlanta. I think that's a loss. They go to the Giants on December 9th. I think that's a loss. So they're already at 2-3 in their next five. Not gonna they're not going to run the table. And I think in this conference, you have to get 11 wins in
I
order
disagree.
To make the playoffs.
I actually disagree with you.
Okay.
The six. Remember, there is a 16. And
yep.
Pretty much you have Minnesota at 5-4. I don't know how they'll hold up in a division. Detroit, who can't defend anybody, at 4-4. Tampa is at 4-4. Reality is they're only two games out of a playoff spot. And 9-7 could do it. 10-6, I think, would. Because there's also a chance that a Chicago kind of falls back a little bit. Their offensive line is not good. Their defense cannot keep this up.
Wait, but if they fall back, that doesn't matter to New Orleans. Because New Orleans would either have to make the – because Chicago's not in their division. And Chicago's not being overtaken by the Lions, Packers, or Vikings. As far as I'm concerned, they're 7-1.
Yeah, I think it's a possibility that Green Bay could surpass them.
Okay, well, I think that's where we really disagree at this point. I think once you start going into Chicago in the middle of winter, Chicago's built for this type of weather with Forte and now Michael Bush. I think they are. As far as I'm concerned, if the road has to go through Chicago, and right now the road goes through Atlanta, being the only perfect team, but if the road has to go through Chicago, they are an overwhelming favorite to go to the Super Bowl. I mean, that's just me. So let's switch over to the AFC, because we haven't talked about them very much. Now, and to me, they are definitely the weaker of the conferences this year. I mean, there's no question in my mind. There is other than the Texans, there's not a team that I would say they're definitely going to the playoffs.
Oh, I thought you just said the NFC was the weaker division. I wasn't sure what you were talking about.
AFC is definitely the weaker of the division.
Oh, absolutely.
Other than Houston and maybe Pittsburgh, because the way that they're playing right now, I think everybody else is a crapshoot. I mean, even if you go to the AFC East, you got – everybody within a game of each other except for the Jets.
No, you got Buffalo at 3-5 also.
Oh, always forget Buffalo.
They're eminently forgettable, unfortunately, for Bills fans and for the rest of the NFL. Yeah, I mean, Houston is going to be the definitive favorite going forward. Denver's playing pretty well. New England is New England. I think, you know, nobody wants to play New England on a given playoff game. Pittsburgh, you know, it's funny, Baltimore's 6-2, but they have been struggling mightily. And, you know, Cincinnati hasn't done what we thought. Indy's been a nice surprise. Miami's been a nice surprise. Your AFC West pick of the Kansas City. Did you take the Chiefs at 9-7?
I picked the Broncos at 11-5, the Raiders at 10-6. That's off. The Chiefs at 9-7, and the Chargers at 7-9. I did pick them as the best division in the AFC. Now, remember, they all have to play each other in the next month or two. So it's quite possible they can all get to about 8-8. But aside from the Broncos, nobody's winning double-digit games in that division.
Yeah. So. It's pretty ugly. Indy's a nice surprise. I still don't know if I see them as a playoff team. They would be a playoff team at this point. I don't think they'll hold. But the reality is someone's got to get that six. You know, and I'm under the assumption New England will eventually pull away from the AFC East.
I'm with you.
I believe Baltimore and Pittsburgh, you know, Baltimore will struggle, but I think Pittsburgh may overtake them. But I believe both of them will make the playoffs. I think Houston's a non-discussion point right now, and Denver is looking like the best team in the AFC West. But you're going to need a sixth team out of it. You're going to need a sixth playoff team. And I don't know what you're looking at. Are you looking at a Miami?
You're looking at either a Miami, an Indianapolis, a Cincinnati, or maybe. I mean, you know, it's happened before, the same way as the Giants. The Chargers may have another run in them. I don't think they do. I think they looked awful on Thursday night, even though they won. I still think they looked poor against Kansas City. I thought they should have blasted them out of the building, and they really didn't. I mean, they played well, but Ryan Matthews is always a question mark. Ronnie Brown is about 48 years old. No, he's really not 48, but he plays like it. And Jackie Battles or other. I mean, if Phillip Rivers has it in the tank for one more big run, maybe. But, I mean, that would be the team that I'd look to make the run, because the Chiefs are just horrible. The Raiders are just horrible. So they get to play the Broncos one more time, and other than that, they have a pretty easy schedule going through. So, like you said, somebody's got to win the sixth spot. Do I hope that it's the J-E-T-S, yes, yes, yes? Yes. Do I think it will be? No, we have the most overrated coach in the NFL.
Now, do you think he's the most overrated coach in the NFL?
No, I think it's an incredibly stupid poll. I mean, the poll was a Sports Illustrated poll. 116 players were surveyed as to who, and you couldn't vote for your own coach. Now, why do I think it's stupid? Because number one was Rex Ryan with 31 votes. Number two, you want to guess who number two was?
I think it was Belichick.
It was. 15 votes. Bill Belichick is not an overrated coach. Not at all. I mean, if you want to think that Bill Belichick's an overrated coach, go talk to Scott Pioli down in Kansas City. Go talk to Josh McDaniels when he was in Denver. The only guy that has come out of that tree that has done anything in the NFL by themselves, Eric Mangini, that has done anything by themselves, is Thomas Dittrich in Atlanta, the GM now there. Nobody else has done anything. So if you want to pin New England's success over the last 10 years on anybody, it's Bill Belichick. I mean, to me, that's what makes this poll so asinine. Is Rex Ryan a good coach? He's a good coach. Is he as good as he thinks he is? No. But there are definitely more overrated coaches than him, and I'd start with that guy in Dallas.
Oh, I'm not under the impression that anyone really thinks that Jason Garrett is a great coach. I find it hard to make determinations. Like a guy like Andy Reid, I know he's third in the poll, and Andy Reid has been there for 15 years, and people just tune him out. You know, it's very, very difficult to, you know, to maintain coaching a team for such a long period of time. I mean, Jeff Fisher had some reasonable success with it in Houston, or I guess Tennessee, or wherever they are now. But it's very hard to keep more than 9 or 10 years. And, you know, I mean, I think everyone's under the impression Reid will be gone after this year. And, you know, you'll see what happens. You know, maybe he moves up to... I'm sorry.
I mean, the interesting thing that I've looked at over the last couple of days is how many coaches may be fired after this year. I mean, I think that we should be going on a firing watch at this point. So let's go down the divisions. I mean, I think Jim Harbaugh is safe in Baltimore.
John Harbaugh.
John Harbaugh.
Let's just do it quickly by divisions.
Yeah.
Coughlin is safe. Andy Reid is probably gone.
Right.
Jason Garrett, I think they will get one more year or two.
Really? You think he stays? If Sean Payton's available, you think he stays?
I think Sean may eventually end up figuring out what to do. I think they eventually re-sign Payton when this is all said and done. Mike Shanahan's interesting. You know my feelings on Mike Shanahan. I'm not a fan. Never have been. I think he's got too much. Schneider's invested too much in him to consider this. But the positions that he has put RG3 in, from being a wideout to started running some of these options, this way, him in Washington hasn't exactly changed my opinion. I think in the NFC North, everybody is safe. Well, I'm sorry, what, you want to talk on Shanahan or anyone in the NFC?
Well, you think Jim Schwartz is safe in Detroit?
Yeah, what I was going to say, he was the only one where I would even raise my eyebrows a little bit, but I do think he is safe, having led this team from, what was it, 0-16 to, you know, to the playoffs in 2 years. I think
I think he'll be given a little bit of a benefit of the doubt. Although I don't remember if it was him or Marinelli that was 0-16.
Marinelli was 0-16, and he came back and won seven games the next year.
Yeah.
Going to the South, what about Ron Rivera in Carolina?
I think he's gone. I think they have to win five or six games. I don't think Joe Vitt will stay in New Orleans. You know, we'll see what happens. You know, we'll see what happens with Sean Payton. The NFC West.
I mean, Harbaugh is staying. Pete Carroll stays. I think this is time for Wisenhunt to be let go. I think this is the end of Ken Wisenhunt.
I agree. It hasn't been talked about very much, but the team was in the Super Bowl 3 years ago on kind of a fluky run. They're just not getting any better.
I'm concerned with him, he tied his ship to Kevin Cobb. And when Kevin Cobb wasn't the guy that they needed, and now it's John Skelton out of Fordham. And, I mean, if you watched any of the Cardinals, which I know most of this country hasn't because it hasn't been on TV, it's Larry Fitzgerald versus the world. And that's really bad. Okay, let's plow through the AFC real quick. We've got 5 minutes to go. Do you think North Turner stays?
No, North Turner's gone.
Okay, Romeo Crennel.
They go 3-13, I think he's gone. Although they just signed him,
it's
kind of difficult to eat.
Okay, Dennis Smith is going to stay in Oakland. I don't think that they fire him after 1 year.
No,
Broncos, John Fox stays. Dolphins, Philbin stays. Do you think Rex Ryan is staying one more year?
I do. I think they're going to give Ryan one more year. I think Woody likes him a lot.
I think Chan Gailey stays, and we know Belichick stays.
I think Chan Gailey's gone. I think Chan Gailey's gone at the end of the year.
Okay, I think he stays. So Jacksonville, Mike Munchak, his first year, you think he stays or goes? This is first
year. Isn't Mike Munchak the coach of Tennessee?
Not Mike Munchak. I'm sorry. What the heck is his name? It's Mike something.
Yeah, I know he was talking about.
He's the offensive coordinator for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's not Munchak. It's Mularkey.
Mike Mularkey. Okay, Mike Mularkey in Jacksonville?
Yes, he'll stay. It's his first year. They'll give him some time.
Okay, Chuck Pagano is back instead of Bruce Arians in Indianapolis.
Healthy.
Mike Munchak in Tennessee. Threw down the gauntlet the other day.
Yeah, but I do think he's a Tennessee institution. I think they'll give him another year.
Okay, we think Gary Kubiak's staying. I think Pat Shurmur is gone in Cleveland with the raising of the roof and letting everybody go. How about Marvin Lewis?
I think Marvin Lewis may be gone if they don't go 7-9 at least. He's had a very long career. It hasn't been talked about very much, but they've had two playoff games in 10 years.
I'm agreeing with you. And we know that the other two are staying, Pittsburgh and Baltimore. So we got a couple of minutes left. I'm just going to be very, very brief. Thank you to all the first responders in the last week in New York and New Jersey and Connecticut and throughout the East Coast. I mean, you guys do not get the recognition you deserve. Absolutely not. There's been nobody better than you guys in the last couple of weeks, responding to everything and anything, getting power back up. LIPA, I know you get a lot of crap, but you guys have been doing a great job getting New York back to where it needs to be. To the people that are volunteering, keep it up. I was out with Julie Ruderman and Seth Ruderman. You guys are fantastic. If you need any more pictures as to what the Ruddermans have been doing, check out Facebook. Check out Seth or my homepage, or Seth and Sean will be posting some pictures along what the Ruddermans have been doing. Fantastic stuff here from that family. I really don't have anything else to say about that. One more thing, go out and vote. People died for the privilege or the right that you have to go vote. And to all those election officials that are getting crap, you know what? They're doing it on their own time. Don't give them crap. They're sitting there so you can vote. Let it be. Let it be. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And to all our new listeners, I appreciate it. Sean Palmer.
Yep.
Seth, take it away.
I have 7 seconds. So I apologize for the book. It was in bad taste. Jules, we love you. Great job. Props to all the marathoners who did the supplies. So I think we're still recording a little bit. For all the marathoners who ran the Staten Island, I think what you did is incredible. I couldn't even walk that far or drive that far. So for Sean Palmer, Seth Kamens, Seth and Sean, college basketball preview tonight. It's next week. Good night, everybody.
See ya.